Turuntuset tulee jo on äl.
And our main topic today is about game thinking. To introduce the topic, I would like to say that gamification in general has been a buzzword for marketeers for, let's say, some years now. And still there are a few persons who really know what it is, and I think even less of them who have really any good experience about it. We know that gaming is probably one of the fastest growing industries, and theoretically marketeers should have a lot to learn from the game professionals. And Christoph, my first question to you is, can you give some examples about what are the things that are most powerful to be learned from gaming industry?
I sure can, and thanks for the invitation. I really appreciate it. If one thinks about game thinking or gamification, the biggest thing to know and the biggest learning is that the world around us has changed. What people, as we see it, need to come to understand is that the average gamer is no small tiny boy hidden in his child room any longer. The average gamer is in his mid-30s. There's just about as many men as there are women playing games. And the average gamer by the age of 21 has roughly played 10,000 hours.
He
has
she has spent. What an experience.
Yeah. I mean, and what you need to know is 10,000 hours, that's like the amount of time that high school takes. So the only difference is, if you pass high school, you have this sort of certificate that grants you access to higher education. And people might ask, you know, what's the benefit of having played 10,000 hours? Well, our really simple answer is, the least that may be documented is that during those 10,000 hours, the expectations towards the rest of the world outside of games has seriously changed. Games have a certain way of entertaining people, which has evolved through the last 50 years. And if there's one key thing to take away, it's that there's a whole generation growing, and I mean, obviously, it's not limited to young adults, who have different expectations towards goods and services, basically anything that surrounds them, where the quickest answer anybody might give is, why isn't that fun? Couldn't that be more fun? Or why doesn't it feel like fun at all? And this way of looking at the world may be actually applied to literally anything. So I could give examples ranging from small children to seniors, who all experience the world, if you really look at it, in a way that goes like, well, if this would be a game, tell you what, I wouldn't play it, and I wouldn't buy it. I wouldn't spend any time using it. And it doesn't really matter if we may talk about work or a work environment, because, you know, it's been known for a long time now that literally work is nothing else but play. But for some reason, companies make it really difficult to play their game. Products, goods, and services should be fun to use, but somehow people, for a long time now, haven't really thought about what the people out there really want and what they really need. And basically, if you boil it down, what a game designer is really good at, he's really good at grasping what people want and then designing an experience to exactly that need.
If you come to the marketeers, that are usually the people that are behind the goods, services, the communication, loyalty programs, everything you can probably think of, that is a part of the business that could be gamified or that could be looked from a different angle, but can you give some examples about the really kind of some breakthrough, I don't know, marketing campaigns or anything their companies have had the courage to do something And then they really see the perfect results.
Well, I'd be, cautious to call it huge and big and tremendous results. There are examples by now that are remarkable, but, you know, to the best of our knowledge, we ain't seen the best yet. So all examples I can give so far obviously start where you take the lowest hanging fruit. And the lowest hanging fruit, if you think of games, especially if you are not familiar with games and just look at them from the outside, is that games are really rewarding. And that anything that is closely related to any already well-known loyalty program would be beneficial for any company or any organization to incorporate into their goods and services. So that means if we just take one example, any company that has a loyalty program can learn from games how to actually design it in a way that it feels and looks more gamey. You know, how often do we reward somebody and why? And there's lots of examples. One would be, I guess we talked about it earlier, would be Starbucks. But at least in Germany, there are so many different companies, especially those grocery companies that, you know, give away those food stamps or food stamp-likeish badges and rewards for shopping in their supermarket. Whenever I use one of those service providers, I actually, you know, am rewarded for coming back there. And all around this topic, especially in the US, for a couple of years now, there's a lot of companies that have wrapped their business model as a service provider for all those other companies out there, mostly around this. And examples for successful implementation of those basically middlewares range from Playboy, you know, who did a relaunch of their site and saw growth and retention of users and the spending of money of their customers on that site.
Christoph, I'm sorry, I'm not a reader of Playboy. What did they do?
Well, what they do is
you should start to read, Raoul.
Let me give you one really, really, you know, hands-on example. A little bit off marketing, but you see what I'm hinting at. VW, the German car company, really took on that topic years ago. And what they did is they tried to find examples of gamification which are rich, really on the spot and where you have, you know, that's what you're asking for. Really good measurement of is there any effect or is there a benefit of people using gamification on real life goods and services. So the one of those examples I really like the most is that there is somewhere in Scandinavia, actually I forgot where, a speeding camera. And what they did is they took on that speeding camera they completely redesigned it because what they were thinking about is, well, at the moment, we are not rewarding anybody for not speeding at all. What they did is they made the speed camera take a picture of literally each and everybody passing that point. And instead of only taking away money as a penalty from those who were speeding, they made it public knowledge, common knowledge. They told it to everybody who might know that if you are not speeding, you're taking part in a lottery and that you have a chance to win all those penalty fees that were paid by those guys speeding. What they figured is that there were more than 20% less speeding instances since this whole system has been implemented. Another great example is
Christoph, we were talking about Playboy. What happened to Playboy?
You're still eager to listen.
Can we talk a little bit about Playboy, please? One example would be the Playboy, who basically gamified one of their sites and through nothing more than giving away badges and points for revisiting the site and granting people to to rise and shine and brag about being an active part of the community, they saw an 85% of re-engagement of their community and a 60% increase of revenue. Now, the question always is this a short-term or a long-term effect? Because most of the examples that are on the market by now, I'd say, well, this is all nice on the, you know, on a short-term scale, but is this still valid if we talk about months and years? If you wrap your head around this, it always boils down to the same question: what actually is really rewarding in the long run? So, do I really care as the reader of Playboy to get a, you know, non-saying, actually not valuable at all badge and point, which I can do nothing with, only for the duration of a campaign, and is this what the marketeer was actually looking for? Different example, still again, you know, German automotive company, VW, they, through their social media agency, approached us and said, well, we want to re-enter the rally sport. I haven't done that for years. Want to do that again. Have this whole huge social media campaign. And as a part of that, we want to give our gaming fans, gaming rally fans, a game. Now, the agency that was due to deliver, they hadn't done any game before, a literal game, actually. Was meant to be mobile and browser-based as well. They had a rather small budget for what they wanted to achieve. Time was crucial. And they said, well, basically what we need, guys, is we need an idea for a game that fits nicely within our social media campaign that's going to last for roughly 1 year, because that's how long the rally takes. So therefore, the retention the game needs to offer shall be lasting throughout all those 12 months. And as we don't have much money, it needs to be cheap to produce. And we don't have that much marketing money, so the game actually needs to be so good that it markets itself because it's so unique. What we came up with was an idea where within the rally sport, no one had ever thought about taking or giving the player the chance to take the role of the co-pilot. So we designed a game where, as a co-pilot, you indirectly steer a car by so-called pace notes. So it's all this 50 meters, 30 degrees right, hard right, hard right. And you give all those orders basically through a mixture of a real car simulation and a trading card game. Trading card was the social media benefit that, you know, completely changed the game, because throughout all those 12 months, the agency was able to provide their fans with new cards that the community didn't have access to before, through events, through all social media channels, wherever they liked. And whenever there was a new card, people were obviously curious to go back into the game and see if through this new card they could drive all those pre-existing circuits faster than before. As far as I know, this game, as part of the whole social media campaign, was the single most successful part, measured by what it cost, and reached a total download amount of, I guess, 1.5 million. And that's only as far as the app is concerned. So if you would break that down to, you know, what did one contact to my customer actually cost that company, that's a steal. So the range, if you think and talk about gamification, goes from, are we talking about a literal game, or are we talking about modifying a pre-existing service or site, or are we talking about, why don't we come up with something completely new? And then we're in the realm of product development and product innovation.
Christoph, my question is that if I take, let's say, a normal company, let's say that the target group is not the gaming adults or the young adults, but more maybe people in the 40s or older, who are not so keen on gaming, or maybe have even a bit or slightly negative look at that. Are there any ways to teach them also kind of the fun of the gaming? Or is it still that I have to pretty much think about the young people as the next generation, doing everything connected to gaming to them, and then to leave the older generation with everything they have used to and then being grown up?
Not at all. So if we are to gamify or to look at something with a game thinking perspective that is meant for a target audience that you wouldn't consider as gamers per se, so which basically means during their leisure time and free time they wouldn't spend any time on gaming, this still doesn't mean that there's nothing you could apply out of the realm of game design, game development towards their needs and wishes. So one example would be whenever we're talking about games, what they're really good at is giving feedback. Now, anybody who has been employed should know that one crucial part of your employment is how often and how well do you receive feedback from your boss? I mean, is he telling you that you're doing a good job or a bad job? Are you actually aware of what your job is or what you're measured by? Now, if a game wouldn't provide you with decent feedback according to what exactly is your goal, how far away are you from reaching that goal, what are the steps towards that goal, what's to be lost, what's to be earned, you know, how do you weigh in if you do this or that, people would simply stop playing. You know, just they would throw that game in the corner and say, well, you know, there's so many things out there that are better designed, I just wouldn't do it. If I look at it from that perspective, to me, it doesn't really matter if my target audience actually is a gamer or is not a gamer at all. Everybody likes feedback.
And that's true.
Everybody does. And the only question is, how do you deliver it? I mean, have you actually really thought about it? And have you thought about what kind of feedback people would like to receive? How often would they like to receive it? Just one quick example. I guess that pretty much any of your listeners, or all of your listeners, have bought something through Amazon. Now, if you buy something in Amazon, their purchasing process pretty clearly gives you feedback of how many more steps till you finally purchase the product. I don't know when they incorporated this one-button buy process that they have. At least in Germany, they have it right now. And then it's pretty clear. It's like, okay, this is one click, and then you already bought it. If you do it the regular way, they completely are transparent about how much more work is it and what's asked of you in order to achieve your goal, which is I simply want to buy that product and I want to have it delivered to my door. Another example would be, if you look at LinkedIn. Now, LinkedIn is a social media site for professionals to hook up and stay in contact and, you know, find your next employee or whatever your purpose might be. They have a status bar. On each and every profile, there's a status bar that says to how many percent is your status complete. Now, if they wouldn't show me that, I personally would have never ever asked that question as, you know, am I lacking 20% completeness to my profile? To me, it would be completely irrelevant. Now, human nature has it that we can't stand if something is incomplete. And LinkedIn knows that. LinkedIn knows pretty darn well that if there's a status bar and it's incomplete, people just can't help but think about, at least, you know, maybe not conscious, but sooner or later they will think about, why is it that there's a lack of 20% and what do I need to do to get rid of that? Now, the reason why LinkedIn does it is only because they want to have more personalized data for whatever reason. Maybe they want to sell it. Maybe they have a higher chance of hooking people up. Maybe they can filter even in a more efficient way for HR people. Whatever the reason might be, why LinkedIn's, and that's the crucial part, why LinkedIn's business goal is to reach a higher percentage of completeness within the profiles of their users, the only by adding a feedback element that is called a status bar, showing me for how many percent it's already completed, I don't have the number, but they must have tremendously raised the amount of data they gathered. And by that by itself, you wouldn't think of that as gamified, or you know, it wouldn't matter if you are a gamer or not. And that is just one tiny, tiny example of all those things that you can steal from games if you just know where to look.
I just wanted to ask a question about the usual topics, what we usually discuss here every week. And we usually talk about log houses. Log houses, it's an industry that
How
is...
come?
Log homes, log houses.
Why
I'll tell you.
Why do you talk so much about log houses?
Because it's an industry that is important to Estonia.
Okay.
We are probably the Europe's fourth biggest exporters in log homes and log houses, really. Such a tiny country as we are. And that's why we almost in every show talk about how could this knowledge that you have be useful for a company that produces log houses and, for instance, exports them in Germany or to Germany.
Right. So... I mean, what I'm going to say now would apply to any customer we have or anyone that I would recommend to use game thinking at all, which is, first of all, you need to set clear your own goals, your business goals, which is, what are you actually aiming for primarily? Is it literally the amount of, let's stick to your example, the raising the amount of houses sold, or is it raising the... amount of customer awareness for your product, for your brand, for this typical kind of house originating from a you know, specific country, or is it taking care of all those customers within, you know, following your example, Germany, that already have bought a house, and I want to re-emphasize their loyalty to my brand, because I came to realize that maybe, I'm just guessing, best chances for me selling another house within a foreign country would be if somebody recommends it, because somebody saw the house and literally walked into it and was in there. So if I follow that chain of thought and say, well, just shooting at it, let's assume there are already a couple of houses there, and let's take the example of I want to aim for those customers I already have, and I'd like to help them, and now we are switching gears here because we're talking about user goals. I want to help them to more easily brag with what they put so much money in, into.
Okay.
Why didn't I do that before? So, if I'm a German and I'm buying a house from so far away, and it has been traveling all across Europe to reach some far off location anywhere here in Germany, there's got to be a reason for it, right? I need to be a believer in the quality of the wood, or in the craftsmanship, or I really love the brand, or I love the country it originates from. Maybe it's pricing. Maybe I'm a big fan of the brand and the company behind it because it was so cheap in comparison to other offerings I might have had within my local area. So whatever the reason might be, there's got to be a believer in the thing. And why do I need to spend so much money in making other... That's the marketing thing, right? So why do I need to spend so much money in making other people come to realize that this would be a great fit? Why don't I have those champions that I already have and help them be, you know, re-emphasize that the decisions they have made was a brilliant one? So just shooting at it, if this is on the one side, I'm not directly aiming for a sell, a purchase, but I'm aiming for more brand awareness, more potential customers. And on the other side, I'm aiming not for someone who doesn't know me, you know, already, but I'm aiming for someone who knows me well, and I want to strengthen that relationship. Where those two areas of interest meet, that's what we call the playing field. And exactly on this playing field, this is where our work begins, because we would start thinking about what's in the best of interest to both of those domains. Now, Truth is that usually whenever you have a player on the one side and a player on the other, there's not only goals to be achieved, there's also things to give. So we try to analyze, and that would be the thing to do in this example as well, what are the assets to be invested from either side? Now, any usual marketeer would think, well, I got a product from a company, you know, I give you product, you give me money. So basically that's the core trade that anybody is aiming for. If you think about it more closely, there's more to be invested from one side and there's actually more to be invested from the other side as well. And what if the proposed scenario would result in something where I'm not aiming for money in the first place, but what I am aiming for is I would like my pre-existing customers to pay me, because I gave them something they didn't have before, to pay me with social contacts, their social network, basically. And just if this would be the trade-off we're aiming for, one solution, having thought about it from a gamer's perspective, could be, is there actually a way that someone who is interested in such a house can easily book a date within in a pre-existing house that somebody literally bought? Is there something like Tupperware, in your country? In Germany, we have those companies that only sell directly door to door, and they have those big events that any housewife can have in their homes, and basically that's how they sell. It's direct marketing. So why not have a site where people can easily hook up dates and meet up with each other, because you want to have them brag about it? Why not have a site or a place or a magazine or anything where people can tell their, following this Airbnb example, tell their stories? You know, that's my story. That's the story why I bought that house. That's the amount of children I had in the house. That's who died in my house. I don't know, whatever the stories are, and sharing those stories. So whenever you share that story, it always will lead back to whoever gave this person the chance to write and publish that story in the first place, and that just might be the producer of that home.